Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And you know us. We come to you live every Thursday to talk about what's most important to you, business. And we have addressed business from money to leadership to organizational development, project management, and we've even looked at the most important thing, your health. And tonight, as every night, we always have a guest. Before we introduce our guest, I'd like to introduce my co-host because I never, ever take this journey alone. Lori, let them know you're here.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in again tonight, Thursday night. Super excited to be here. I'd like everyone to know that we had our kickoff last night for the Man Woman of the Year for Leukemia Lymphoma. So please go to my page at LGC Interiors, and you can purchase sweatshirts, T-shirts, coffee mugs, bottle openers or corkscrew things for your wine on our link, and that would support our team and help spread the word. Everything is labeled and branded with our team, the Blue Angels, and thank you to the Blue Angels for helping to support LLS. So it's a cause that's important to me, so please follow along. We have tickets for events. We have May 15th, a tribute band for Creedence Clearwater Revival. Currently, we have our wine shop open, and purchase proceeds will be going towards LLS for every bottle, or I don't know, maybe you want a case. It is still COVID. If you haven't gotten your shot, you're not going out and about. We have two books. If you go to Julie Hernandez, proceeds are also going towards LLS. So stay tuned, keep posted, LGC Interiors on Facebook or Instagram. Those links are posted there as well. And we're going to talk about tonight's guest. And also, as a business owner, taking care of your health is primary, because you don't have a business if you don't have your health. So we're going to introduce Jen Trepik. Jen, I think you have your own podcast, The Salad with a Side of Fries. And you also talk about healthy living. So if you can introduce yourself and tell people what it is you do and how you've been successful, we'd love that.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Always a joy to chat with you guys. So hi, everybody. So my background is really in business and marketing, and I came to all this wellness stuff through my own saga. You know, I feel like the word journey doesn't do it justice, you know?
No, never.
Right? And so I joke that I grew up the skinny one in a family of dieters, but really I was just on a diet my whole life and didn't realize it. And I grew up a dancer, so I also think that I was probably more aware than the average person, you know, of my body. Anyway, after high school, going into college was probably, you know, everything changed. My food changed. I wasn't dancing anymore. And that was, you know, the first time I had to figure this out. And I was like, okay, I've watched my family do this my whole life. And I was like, great. I tried every diet under the sun, gained and lost the whole nine, you know, over and over, tried every diet out there. And even when I first learned about the program that I now teach, I was like, no, that's okay. Like, I've got my thing. You know, because we all think we know. We've got our plan. And
right.
I saw people who were following this plan in particular, and I noticed that they were keeping the weight off. That was the first thing. The second thing was, this woman was telling her story of losing, like, 150 pounds. And I wish I could tell you more about her. I don't even know her name or where she lives or anything. Anything she said after this 140, 150-pound thing, I heard no words. It was like the teacher in Charlie Brown, right? Like, wah, wah. And I was just staring at her and in my own head, because I couldn't see where 10 pounds could have been on her body. And she's telling me that the equivalent of another human was attached to her. And I, yeah, And I had a moment with myself of like, get out of your own way. I think they know something you don't know, right? And I followed the program myself. It completely changed my life. It's the only thing that's allowed me to say I've kicked my food issues. And from then on, I set out on a mission to pay it forward and help people help themselves with this information, because I really feel like it's the nutrition education we're all supposed to know and no one ever taught us. So late 2007, on the side of working full-time, I started working with clients as a health coach. I got certified in, you know, everything that I do, and then built my business really as a side hustle for 12 years. July of 2019, left my full-time job, launched my podcast August of 2019. And I suppose you could say the rest is history, but that podcast, as you said, is called Salad with a Side of Fries. And it's all wellness and weight loss, but for real life, and clearing up the misinformation, bad science, and marketing that's wreaking havoc in wellness. And you guys can check that out on, you know, anywhere you listen to podcasts, it is there. So iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, all the podcast platforms, it's there for you.
So tell us the secret.
Well, it's both, right? That's the balance, because what, right, and what Ted wanted to talk about tonight, right, this gray area thing, you know, we have it in our heads that we're either eating salads or we're eating fries, right? That's the black and white thought process. We're on or we're off.
Yep.
It's a good food or it's a bad food. And our objective is really to learn in the middle, where we're not living in these extremes, where, you know, everything in moderation, even moderation, right? And it's learning to sort of bob and weave, you know, and navigate life always moving forward. Have you guys ever been sailing, either of you?
Yes, I have.
I have.
Okay. So can you sail from point A to point B in a straight line?
No.
Most likely, no.
Right. A sailboat cannot move in a straight line, right? It sort of zigzags all the while moving forward from, you know, the port to its destination, right? But it's zigzagging back and forth. And that's exactly what we're doing. Our objective is to zigzag a little bit each direction, always moving forward to get from where we are to where we want to be. Because what happens is that that's where health is. That's where sustainable living is. That's where we get to the objectives that we want and we can keep them, rather than if we get from A to B in a straight line, it won't last, right? Like if we lose the weight, in air quotes, in a straight line without ever having to navigate, you know, a birthday, a holiday, you know, these things that come up and make things more challenging, then when those things do come up, then it becomes the black and white. We're not on anymore. We're off. And so that's straight. The objective is to learn from those zigzags, right? And it's that learning how to bring us back that makes this for forever.
So when you say a straight line, you're saying another way to say it is the perfect diet, like you're flawless. You don't miss a beat, 365 days a year. This is your, let's say, your food program, and you don't deviate from, like, you're saying a straight line is a very strict regimen that you follow. And you know, when you talk about sailing, you could say the same for airplanes. Even when the airplane's on autopilot, it's always self-correcting. It's never going exactly straight from New York to Los Angeles. It's always getting back on course. So you're saying one way is to have this really rigid, strict diet, and you never deviate from, you know, the X foods that are in your regimen. And the other one is that it's not that you're off course, you're just not you're just sort of self-correcting over time. But the bottom line is you went from point A to point B.
Yep, and it's in that self-correction, learning how to self-correct and adjust, learning what it feels like when, you know, we're navigating a little too far this way or a little too far that way for our own comfort, right? And when I talk about, like, the straight line, yes, it's, you know, a super rigid food plan. It could also look like a super rigid exercise plan. It could anything where we are approaching it from a very rigid thought process. So a lot of times with this stuff, it's less about the actual action and more about the energy around it and the thought process around it. So for example, if you go to the grocery store and on the way to, you know, from the store to the car, you drop one egg, right? One of your dozen. What do you do with the other 11 eggs?
Take them home.
Throw them out.
Right. We tend to take them home, right? We maybe protect them a little bit, put them in a safe spot in the car, carry them separately so that we don't drop another one, right? Lori, your joke of throwing out the other 11, but that's what a lot of us do.
Yep.
When we say, oh, I ate that, so screw the whole day or the whole week or the whole
yep.
month or the whole year. Or I couldn't
yep.
get a full hour's workout in, so forget it, I'm not going to do anything. Why did we just throw out the
right.
other 11 eggs? They were perfectly fine.
Right.
That's
yeah,
the great
I'm very
area.
Much like that.
Yeah. And a lot of us are, and that's part of this,
mm-hmm.
like I said, I hate that word,
journey.
But it's part of this journey of figuring out how to live in the gray area between the black and white so that this becomes sustainable and for forever and doesn't require so much brain capacity, right? When we're living in that rigidity, it requires a lot of thinking. We're keeping track of everything we had in our head and everything that has to happen. And, you know, is this a good thing or a bad thing? We're overanalyzing everything, right? It requires
yep.
a lot of brain capacity. But if we didn't have to keep track of all of that in our head, if everything was okay and it was just small adjustments here and there and making it happen and figuring out what we can do, there's a lightness and an ease to it. And then all of a sudden, brain capacity is freed up to put toward the things that are really important, right? That really make a difference
right.
in our lives.
Interesting. Just one second. If anyone would like to call in and ask Jen a number of questions, you can call in at 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So, Jen, I train in the gym a
mm-hmm.
lot. You know, in my gym, there are a couple of people who are bodybuilders.
Yep.
And when they get close to competition, their diet is so strict and rigid, and it's exactly
mm-hmm.
what you said. Like, they have a trainer, and they have a – not only their workout routine is very strict, but the foods they eat, they count how many portions,
mm-hmm.
how many ounces – you know, there's no what you would call cheating. There's no gray area for them if they want to win.
Yep.
And they understand that. So they're like, they're just pushing down the body fat to like 3%.
Yep.
That means no pudding, if they go to the wedding, there's no, you know, they're sitting there, well, how much does this steak weigh?
Yep.
And there's no wedding cake for them. They are black and white.
Yep.
And so, and you know what? Those are, they're competing, right? So there's,
exactly.
there's a clear intention that supports their regimen supports an outcome.
Yep.
But if it sounds like you're talking about people who are looking for an outcome that's more about a healthy lifestyle, it's not
exactly
that
the
you
average
are
person is
competing.
Not exactly
right.
The average person is not competing. But I will tell you, many people in those situations have various degrees of disordered eating for that reason, right? Right before a competition, they're doing something very, very extreme because a lot of what they're doing, right, they're shredding, they're cutting fat and they're focusing on dehydrating because that helps show everything, you know, all of their muscle and tighten the skin, you know, against their muscle and show the vascularity that they're looking for in, you know, bodybuilding competitions. And that's very different than the average person and what their goals are in their health. The other side of that is look at what they're having when they're not training for a competition. And it's often a different extreme. And it's that mindset, regardless of our goal, that mindset is disordered around our food. And it serves a purpose for some, right? But for the average person and what we want to be teaching people, and especially many of your listeners are parents and have families, right? What are the examples that we're setting? Who are we impacting? Who are the people around us? And listen, like Hollywood too, you know, if your career depends on your body, you have a different level of commitment. But we can still learn to have a different approach and a more balanced approach, you know, even in certain situations where there's, you know, a bodybuilding competition and things like that. Does that make sense?
It does. So how do you start with your client? So, you know, the average person, they eat everything, right? They eat the salad and the fries and the cheeseburger and have pudding or the apple pie, whatever the dessert, right? And some chocolate. And they think about working out, but, you know, they can't see, as you said, an hour every day. So for them, they just do nothing. So how do you start? Like, what's step one? How do you start?
Yeah, so this, what you're describing is sort of maybe what someone's doing before we start talking and before we start working together. And first thing is, it is a process, right? It is not a flip a switch. But one of the things that we need to take a step back and realize is that a lot of this is much more science than we've been led to believe. So a lot of us, right, we feel like our goal is to be healthier, to not need the statin drug, to come out of that pre-diabetic diagnosis, to have energy, to sleep well, right? All of these elements of our wellness is the goal. And we feel like with the information that we've been given a lot of times, we feel like we suck. We have no willpower. It's me. Right? I can't follow the program. I can't stick to it. Right? And that snowballs into a lot of this feeling of defeated and feeling like, well, if I don't have an hour, it's not worth it. Right? All of these kinds of thoughts. So the first piece is to realize this is very, very, very chemical. It's not you. You haven't failed. All of these diets have failed you. So taking a step back and understanding what happens chemically in the body when we dramatically cut calories or cut out whole food groups, you know, a lot of what we hear about from typical diet programs, the scale goes down, right? The number in the scale goes down for a finite period of time, and then it stops. And then we get frustrated and we add these foods back in. The reason why the scale goes down and then it stops is because we're losing that weight as water and muscle. Well, muscle is metabolically active. So then when we add these foods back in, we have extra fuel and less muscle to be burning that fuel. So the scale starts to go back up. We might end up at the same number as we were before, but by body composition, we're actually fatter at the same number. So we lose it as water and muscle, gain it back as fat. Lose it as water and muscle, gain it back as fat. So it's very chemical. The other side of all of this is we're a country of people who are overfed and undernourished. So our body cannot self-regulate chemicals. Our body cannot self-regulate these new-to-nature molecules that taste like food and look like food, but aren't actually providing the body with nutrition. So what can happen is that we eat things, and our body says, I don't really know what to do with this, but there's only so many signals I can give you, and what I need are vitamins and minerals and protein and fat and carbohydrates. that I know what to do with. And I only have so many signals, so I guess I'm going to tell you I'm hungry because I need these things. So our body is continuing to send hunger signals because what we're giving it is not what it needs. The other side of that is a lot of the processed foods also have chemicals in them that turn off our brain's ability to know when we're full. So over years
Wait a second. You're saying something really profound here. So the food, or what we call food, could be completely working against us.
Correct.
Is what you're saying, in more than one way. So what do you mean by, you were saying that our body is sending us hunger signals, but it hasn't, I think you're saying it hasn't received
nutritional
value.
So if we're eating, you know, Pringles and some Sour Patch Kids and, you know, maybe some, I'm trying to think of like what else might be in there. Like any of these processed foods, right? Most of those foods contain chemicals more than they actually contain vitamins, minerals, nutrients, right? Our macronutrients of protein, quality carbohydrates, and quality fat, right? And then micronutrients of vitamins and minerals. So we're giving our body stuff. It's going through the process. So the digestive process, right? Even the beginning of the digestive process with salivating, right? Salivating triggers the stomach to say, food's coming. So our body starts to break this down and it says, wait a minute, I'll do what I can with this, but this isn't really what I needed. So
then your stomach is full, except your body still
lasts very long, right?
Starving.
Right? We feel, right? We're satisfied for a bit and then shortly thereafter we're hungry again. A few things happen. One is a lot of those foods are high glycemic, so it spikes our blood sugar and then creates a drop in blood sugar. That drop in blood sugar makes us hungry again, right? Our body says we need fuel. And with those, with that short-lived fuel, because there isn't proper nutrition there, right, our body will continue to tell you it's hungry to get what it needs. Because what signals does our body have? Hunger, thirst, pain.
And pleasure.
Right, but there aren't that many signals it can send to say, I need vitamins and minerals and nutrients for energy. So there are hormones. So even the same way that we can become insulin resistant, right? We know that to be diabetes. We can become resistant to the hormones that tell us when we're hungry and when we're satisfied.
And those are the foods you were saying can literally shut those off because it has chemicals in it. So
that's a piece of it. Ignoring those hormones is a piece of it. So, right, for many, we've heard over the years, calories in, calories out. Eat less, move more. Right? We get that hunger signal. Nope, I'm not listening to you. I have been told to eat less. Right? So we start to ignore that hunger signal. Our body is pumping this hormone. It's not doing anything. So eventually our body will stop producing that hormone, or we stop responding to the presence of that hormone because there's so much of it. So ghrelin is the hormone that tells us when we're hungry. Leptin is the hormone that tells us when we're full. So you might notice that, you know, you don't feel hungry, and then once you start eating, it's difficult to stop. Right? That's that leptin resistance, when it's difficult to stop eating. So understanding that a lot of this is chemical, it takes a lot of the pressure off from the jump to say, it's not me, it's chemical. And when I understand that, I can approach this from a more intellectual way rather than an emotional way.
And food is emotional for a lot of people. Isn't there another aspect that could be stress-induced hunger?
Absolutely.
Or
stress,
like,
right? So cortisol, the stress hormone, right? That causes us to crave a lot of sugar and caffeine and things that give our body fuel very quickly, right? There are, you know, there is a chemical component to stress. And, you know, stress is, we could do a whole other conversation on stress. So putting a pin in that for a second to address the emotional eating component. So to start, if we address it from the actual physical hunger and understanding leptin and resistance and proper fuel for the body, then when those emotional hunger moments show up, we are aware of them. We can make an intentional choice around them. Even if we decide to still emotionally eat, we know we're doing it, we accept that, and we move on, versus the what tends to happen for a lot of people is, you know, something is crazy at work, we're eating, and then an hour later we're going, what did I do? Why did I just eat all that? Why am I a terrible person? Why can't I just not eat the things? Right? It doesn't go to that place. Because we're much more aware and those situations are fewer and further between when we're starting from dealing with the actual nutrition first. So the way I sort of describe it is like right now, you might feel like you're standing at the bottom of Mount Everest, you know, in your underwear and barefoot, and someone's like, cool, climb. Right? And you're like, what do you mean? Like, I have no tools. I don't even have clothes. Like, it's freezing. What do you mean I'm supposed to climb Mount Everest? Right?
Right.
Once we have an understanding of this fundamental element of nutrition and some of these hormones, and we, you know, can reset ourselves a touch from the beginning, then all of a sudden, you're standing at the bottom of a ski hill in Vermont with poles and boots and skis and a coat and a chairlift. And you're like, oh, okay, I got this.
We're at Stratton.
Right.
Okay. So, and is there another component of pleasure around food, or did you kind of outline that already?
Well, food can be pleasure, right? There's a lot, we have a lot of attachments to food. Food is love, food is connection, right? Especially in a lot of our lives. The question is, it can bring that when we need it for sustenance, right? It can be a joyful experience. But if we're turning to the food to create the joy, to create the love, to create the connection, that's when we have a problem. That's when it's much more challenging. That's when those emotional eating situations arise. So if you notice that you're eating quite a lot when you're not what I call stomach hungry. So for example, if the only thing that sounds good is cookies and cake and ice cream, then odds are we're not actually physically hungry, right? When we're actually physically hungry, even broccoli will sound good. Or maybe not broccoli, but you'll go for the string beans or the celery and the carrots, right?
If the Let's only go thing for spinach. Spinach.
Spinach, yep. So I did an episode about spinach last week. So if the, you know, if spinach sounds good, then we're really hungry. If the only thing that sounds good are the more indulgent choices, the ones that are more full of sugar, then we're likely not really hungry. And that's when a moment comes up, and I want you to grab a piece of paper and a pen, if you're the journaling type, or just take a minute and ask yourself, where am I not being fed? Where am I not being fed? What purpose am I looking for these cookies to serve? I'm stressed out. I'm procrastinating. I'm frustrated. I, you know, whatever it is. Right.
I'm bored.
Yeah. Bored. Right? Looking for some entertainment. So it's one of those things where when we can get to an awareness factor of what's driving those things, then we know how to address them. And we can say, okay, if I'm actually looking for the cookies to give me some entertainment because I'm bored, what can I do to have a break and get some entertainment in a non-food related way? Right? Maybe it's pick up a book. Maybe it's call a friend. Maybe it's play a game on your phone. Maybe it's go for a walk. Maybe it's, you know, do a crossword puzzle or Sudoku or something that's feeding the actual need.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, it's like we're looking for the wrong key for the lock.
Yep.
So here's the question. So there are certain hormones, biochemicals that are secreting to tell you you're hungry or to tell you you're full.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to tell me if I'm asking this incorrectly. Are there certain foods? So let's say, so like you just said, if you're really hungry and spinach or broccoli sounds good, then that's the hormone that's saying you're hungry and it's appropriately signaling you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may
have just eaten.
Well, on the other hand, you may have just eaten and your body wants to signal that it's full, except it's still signaling that it's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So are there foods you can eat that will turn those hormones off is what I'm at, if that's the right way to ask it. Like the one that's saying,
chemicals, right? If we're eating... Yeah, so if we're eating chemicals, if we're eating food devoid of nutrition, it is difficult for that hunger hormone to turn off and the satiety hormone to turn on longer term, right? There are also, if we have, you know, now it's called metabolic syndrome, but that's when you are resistant to leptin and ghrelin and these hormones, right? And so in that case, there could be other things going on. So it makes the argument for working with someone like a health coach or somebody who understands these things to help you look at a tracker, look at a food log and see what else might be going on. And to see what foods for you. I will say generally a lot of times it's an appropriate time, you know, or a lot of times when we're craving sugar, what our body actually needs is protein. Most people are under eating protein.
Mm. Okay.
So a lot of times what we need is protein, but we want to go back to, right, macronutrients are protein.
Before we walk away from that, so if your body needs protein, what are two foods, examples of two foods that are rich in protein you can eat?
If you eat animal protein, chicken, turkey, lean steak. If you don't, you could do organic tofu, nutritional yeast.
Nutritional yeast for consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Oh, never heard of that. Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it has a lot of protein.
Interesting.
Now let me ask you, as if someone is a vegetarian or even a vegan,
mm-hmm.
could they eat nutritional yeast?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so those are rich proteins that could support you in turning off those hormones when you're hungry instead of eating sweets. So you're probably protein deficient. Got it.
Okay. When we think nutrition is what supports, right, the proper response to leptin and ghrelin. So you maybe hear people saying, oh, I'm counting my macros, right? That's a reference to macronutrients. Now, you don't have to go crazy counting. I'm not a counter because to me that added to the black and white, right, that obsessive behavior. But, you know, macronutrients are the nutrients that we need in large quantities. So that's protein, quality fats, and quality carbohydrates. And when you think about quality carbohydrates, we typically associate carbohydrates with grain, right? We grew up on that food pyramid that had grain at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
very much
sidebar,
so.
Right. So I'll come back to macronutrients in a second. That food pyramid that we grew up on is based on economics, not nutrition and not biology. It was about getting us to eat what we grow in this country. What we grow is corn and wheat and soy. No one on the planet has a grain deficiency. So when we talk about carbohydrates and quality carbohydrates, what we actually need is fiber. And our best sources of that are vegetables and sometimes fruit. So then your micronutrients are vitamins and minerals, right? The nutrients that we need in sort of smaller quantities, but we get them through our food choices. So that's, again, our vegetables and fruit. So
now, a quick question. What about potatoes?
Potatoes
and,
are a starch.
Pasta.
Yep. So pasta is a grain. Potato is a starch. So they are different types.
Are they carbohydrates?
Yes. They are different types of carbohydrates that we want in smaller quantities because they don't provide the same nutrition as our vegetables and our fruit. So taking a step back for a hot second, I'll come back to your potatoes and starches and grains in a second. So every day, if you're a note taker, write this down. What we want to eat all the time. Protein and fiber at every meal makes removing fat no big deal. Protein and fiber at every meal makes removing fat no big deal. Protein is clean, lean protein. Fiber is vegetables and sometimes fruit. And then 2 to 3 times a day, we need quality fat as well. And I'm still working on how to get the fat part into that sentence, but, you know, stick with me, right? Mm. So instead of thinking quantity in, quantity out, right? Calories in, calories out. I want you to think quality in, quality out. Get up and move more. So it's the quality of the foods that we're eating that give us our energy, that properly fuel our body, that allow us to function properly, that put us in a good mood, right? Because our neurotransmitters can't function without the proper vitamins and minerals and nutrients. So where do grains and starches come into play? Think about your grains and your starches more like a condiment. Okay, the average American eats more grain than an Olympic athlete is recommended to eat on race day. The average person is not doing the kind of physical activity of an Olympic athlete on race day. So we don't need that kind of grain. So those types of carbohydrates that fuel our body in that way. What the average person needs is more of the fiber and the vitamins and minerals and nutrients. So when we have our starches and our grains, whether it's, you know, pasta or rice or, you know, potatoes. Think of them more like a condiment. So what are the condiments that a lot of us use? Ketchup, mustard, mayo, right? So our starches and our grains are to add a little extra flavor, a little extra texture, something different, but they're not designed to be an entire food group or the basis of our nutrition.
Huh. Now, what if you are an athlete who trains off, you know, every day? Do you need carbohydrates then as fuel?
So it's a little bit different, right? Generally, we want to think about the outcome goal that you're looking for. If you have a weight loss goal versus a performance goal, right? And fueling for performance is different than fueling for weight loss. Right. If we're looking to fuel for performance, there is a little bit more carbohydrate, but we also want that carbohydrate to be around the, you know, generally ahead of that activity so that the activity is burning the fuel from that carbohydrate. Those carbohydrates give us quicker fuel. So we want to use our muscles to burn through that, right, rather than eating it after.
Okay, and there are complex carbohydrates that are easier for your body to break down, correct? Or is that, am I misinformed?
The complex, simple carbohydrate thing is something like we all sort of grew up on, right, and learned, but I think it's really misleading. Focus on whole grain versus, you know, the processed grain. So even taking rice, for example, you can buy rice that requires an hour to cook. You can buy rice that cooks in 60 seconds in the microwave. You can buy rice that boils in a bag in 10 minutes, right? In order for rice to cook in a few seconds in the microwave or a few minutes on the stovetop, it has to be processed. That grain is processed to be able to do that, right? Because the whole grain takes a long time to cook. We want to eat that grain as close to nature as possible. So we want less processing. So the way I think about it, the more work the machine does, the less work our body does.
Okay.
So, choose the whole grain over, you know, the bread, the pasta, the quick cooking rice.
That's good advice.
And when we think about, you know, fueling for performance, right? And then it comes back to this whole idea of a lot of times, you know, like we work out so that we can eat, right? Think about it more in terms of earning your workout through proper fuel. Have you supported your body to get the performance that you're looking for in the way that you're fueling it?
So, I often tell people if I could cut food out of my life, I would do that, except I eat to work out. I eat. My food lifestyle is one that sustains my ability to work out and even, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to go through the day for business. But if my nutrition is off, I can feel it in my workout.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it hits harder than others.
Yeah.
So it becomes a science, like you were saying.
mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I used to eat carbs three meals a day, but I took carbs out of my last meal, my dinner meal, and what I feel is it's cleaner, like there's less bloating. So
mm-hmm.
I even though I train, taking carbohydrates out of the diet really has a positive impact. People don't need it as much as they think.
Well, so I want to back up to differentiate carbohydrates and grains. Because we all need carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are a macronutrient. The carbohydrates you need are those coming from vegetables and fruit, not those coming from rice and pasta and potatoes.
Okay.
We can have the rice and pasta and potatoes, right? But not in the same quantity and unnecessarily cutting out whole food groups, right? Or saying I'm not eating carbs at all. You know, if we unnecessarily cut things out entirely, our body will stop being able to process them. We'll stop producing the enzymes are needed to break them down.
Wow. Okay.
So we don't want to cut out whole food groups for extended periods of time. Right? So I'll typically, with clients, I'll do about 6 weeks without grains, but we're eating vegetables and fruit and still giving ourselves tons of fiber. Right. And what that does is it allows us to develop a ton of new favorite meals that don't rely on grains as the staple. And then we can add the grains and starches back in an appropriate proportion. They can be more of the condiment. But the average person builds a meal around the starch and the grain and then maybe has some vegetables and maybe has some protein.
I think I've heard of people who have tried a no-carb diet, and let's say they've done it for 6 weeks, and at the end of 6 weeks, they kind of gorge themselves and start putting the weight back on.
There you go. So that's your black and white. Taking us all the way back to where we started, that's the black and white. I'm on or I'm off. I'm doing this plan or I'm not. And when I'm doing it, it's this strict thing and I'm never eating these things. On the other side of it, it's, you know, I'm off, so I'm gorging myself, and I'm going to this other extreme.
Right. So you're suggesting just a healthy lifestyle, eat the foods that you enjoy, eat the foods that, like, know that your body has certain needs, and it has a way of signaling what it needs. It produces certain hormones, so you eat certain foods to cater to that, and you enjoy yourself. You're not in the black or white, so that's the gray area where you can actually enjoy, and even if you add a some kind of routine where you have body motion, movement, whether it's yoga or whatever it is, that only supports. How does that work?
Okay, so hold on. So I want to back up to the nutrition piece of it to just, you know, put a bookend on that. There is more to it. And if you are in a place of leptin resistance, there are things that we might need to do, you know, supplementation-wise to rehab the metabolism, right? So the nutrition is a piece of it, and supplementation and certain nutrients can help rehab the metabolism in that way and help our body learn to process, you know, and respond to those hormones again. On the activity side, we want to focus on building muscle. Muscle dictates metabolism.
Okay, so, wait 1 second. Okay, you're a brilliant woman who has a lot of knowledge, and sometimes you might think everyone understands that. So what do you mean when you say that?
When I say what? Muscle dictates metabolism?
Correct.
Yep, that's where I was going next. So muscle is metabolically active. Muscle is burning fuel all the time, whether it's being used actively in a workout, whether we're sitting on our desk, laying on our couch, muscle burns fuel. So our metabolism, the amount of fuel we burn all the time, no matter what, is a function of how much muscle we have. So when it comes to our health and our exercise and our movement, muscle is critically important. Cardio, what we typically think of as cardio, cardio is important. Cardio uses our heart as a muscle. Our heart is a very important muscle. But I think one of the biggest misconceptions about exercise is cardio for weight loss, or that cardio is all we have to do. Because the truth is, our health is improved, right? We can get our heart pumping like a muscle through resistance training. So we can get cardio while we build muscle. So when we look at long-term health, we want more muscle. So when overall in our fitness life, we need to have resistance training to build muscle, cardiovascular training to use our heart as a muscle, and then stretching or flexibility so that we have functional muscle, so that we have balance, so that we don't fall over, so that we have bone density, right? So we need the combination, but most of us, left to our own devices and hearing what we hear in the world or seeing what we see on, you know, social media or, you know, we tend to skew toward the cardio and think that that's the answer. And what I see time and time again with clients and myself and friends is that when we focus on resistance training, our health outcomes benefit.
But does resistance training have a positive impact on your bone strength?
Absolutely. Because it requires bone density, right? Building strength, muscular strength, tends to also require that we are standing on our bones, right? Also, the more muscle we have to hold ourselves up, the less weight and pressure is on our joints and our bones. So it all works together.
And that, as you get older, your bone and density decreases, correct?
As does your muscle. Right? Muscle is one of those things where if you don't use it, you lose it. So all of this is not the kind of thing where it's like, cool, I went outside on recess and when I was 7, so like I'm good. Like, it doesn't work that way, right? If only. We have to do it regularly. And we have to move our bodies often. So we've all heard now, right, sitting is the new smoking, right? Our bodies were not designed to sit all day. The other side of that,
right,
is our bodies were also not designed to sit all day and then go berserk for an hour. So more movement more often is a better recipe for success and longevity. So it doesn't have to be a whole, like going back to your question about how do we get started, right? Sometimes it can be easier to find 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 6 minutes somewhere else. And so if you have 5 minutes between meetings, you could do something like what we call 30-30-30. So stand up from your desk, 30 push-ups, 30 squats, 30 crunches. That takes a couple minutes. Right? That wouldn't even take 3 minutes, really. But you can do it, right, between meetings if you have a couple seconds. If you did that 10 times a day, I think you'd see the difference.
This is in alignment with that. Have you all heard that in, I think it was Russia, on public transportation, if you're willing to do like 30 squats, like when you go to pay for your Metro card, they give you a discount.
We should do that.
Like the machine. Yeah. So the like you go to buy your Metro card and it says, do you want a discount if you do 30 squats? And you say yes. And I guess there's a camera that watches it. And when you do it, like you earned, you know, 20% discount.
I'm into that. I think we should do it, right? I also think, you know, and there's a lot of things in our systems that are a little backwards. So in addition, you know, talking about fueling our fitness and building muscle and proper nutrition and all of these things, our doctors and a lot of our health systems are based on an inappropriate barometer. So in this country, they look a lot at BMI, right? Body mass index. Well, that's
right,
based on height and weight. Well, your weight, that total number on the scale, is made up of not just your fat and your muscle, but your bones and your organs and all of the things and water, right? Everything goes into that total number. And a really good BMI calculator might take your age into account. But what it doesn't tell us is what's making up that total number. What's the balance in that total number, right? So what we want to measure instead is body fat percentage. So you can get scales that do it. There are online calculators if you plug in your weight and a whole bunch of tape measurements. But you want to measure body fat percentage. And
there's a tape test for that.
Yeah. I mean, that can be very expensive, and a lot of times insurance won't cover it unless they see a need for it, and they can be difficult to do and require a lot of things. So there's a lot of stuff that we can do at home, you know, more often. So once a month, I want you to measure your body fat percentage, your total weight, and all of your tape measurements. So your chest, your waist, your hips, your quads, your bicep, your wrist can be helpful. So you're taking these tape measurements and measuring your body fat percentage and ignoring your BMI.
So I have one question before we run out of time.
Sure.
Are there any healthy, indulgent foods?
Everything in moderation, even moderation, right? So it's not about never indulging. The things that you enjoy are the best things to eat when you indulge. The question becomes, how much do you have to feel like you had it? So if it's Thanksgiving and your thing at Thanksgiving is pumpkin pie, right? How much pumpkin pie do you have to feel like you had it? Odds are that's not half the pie, but a bite may not do it. right? The other side to all of this, and we didn't even get into this in this conversation, is about when we have it. So the truth is, whether our body is storing fat or burning fat is a function of blood sugar. We are better, and in an effort to manage blood sugar, we are better off eating our dessert or our sweets right after our meal rather than a few hours later, so that that sugar is processed with all the nutrients from the meal instead of by itself sugar bombing your body and spiking your blood sugar. And by that note, don't go to the restaurant and start with the bread basket, because then even if you ordered super plain steamed fish and vegetables, your body's going to store that steamed fish and vegetables as fat because you started with the bread basket and the bread spiked your blood sugar.
Oh, interesting. So our entire culturally, we've got things sort of backwards here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, everything we've talked about today, by the way, to dig into more of it, there's podcast episodes on all of this in Salad with a Side of Fries. So you can dig into whatever pieces are super interesting.
So and if someone wants to get in touch with you.
If you want to reach Jen, it's Salad with a Side of Fries, or it's Better Your Life, right?
Yeah. So my Better Life Now LLC, or Salad with a Side of Fries podcast.com, or on all social media, it's at Jen Trepek, JennTrepek.
Thank you, Jen, so much for being an amazing guest, and I think we all learned a lot today. So
thanks, Lori.
Get the bread, write it down, and have a nibble.
Yep, eat the bread after.
Right, exactly. So thank you again. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. Ted, did we get through everything?
We covered a lot of ground, maybe even more technical than I anticipated, but it was good because I think it gave people a healthier perspective on what's happening with their body so that people feel less out of control.
Awesome.
So,
absolutely.
Well done. Thank you.
Awesome. Very good. Thank you. And don't forget to go to LGC Interiors for Leukemia, Lymphoma, Help Fight Cancer. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Jen, and have a great week. We'll see you next week, Thursday night at 7.
Thank you so much. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye,
have
everyone.
A great evening, everyone. Take care. Bye.